Brother, do you think they'll drop the bomb? Mother, do you think they'll like this song? Mother, do you think they'll try to break my balls?
So it almost sounds like that song could have been written about Donald Trump. And yes, they will try to break your balls. They've been trying to break your balls every single day of the presidency, which is why it is important for you to stop appeasing them. But welcome to the Liberty Advisor Podcast. It is Monday, April 16th, and we are here to break down really what it is I wanted to have a libertarian's perspective on Trump. We've got him now about a year and a half later, and we've had some, you know, obviously unfortunate news happen over the weekend, or actually on Friday, where since the last podcast where we did decide to strike Syria. And I don't want this podcast really to be too much about that. I do plan on coming out with another one later on this week where I dive more into that. The previous podcast did get quite a bit into that, but I do want to talk about, you know, really a libertarian's perspective on Trump 1 year later. There's been some good things, some bad things, but we are here as a human being, just independent thinker, just breaking things down as they occur. So hope you guys enjoy. I saw a meme the other day, and it read something to the effect, "I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, I'm a free-thinking human being." When Trump was elected, I actually shed a tear of joy. I knew the tyrant we had just held off with Hillary, and I knew that the globalist plans for the New World Order were severely curtailed. I realized World War III was averted, as it had been clear to me going back at least 6 years that we were trying to saber-rattle to start a larger war with a major power to allow the globalists, you know, as I believe it was Rahm Emanuel who said, to not let a good crisis go to waste, and to also be able to blame the inevitable collapse of the monetary system on an outside force, not as a dollar. That way they could say something along the lines of, you know, it was the Chinese, or it was the Russians, or it was the Easter Bunny, and that's the reason why the dollar collapsed. That's the reason why the monetary system fell. It had nothing to do with, you know, the systemic problems all along. And if you guys don't know what I'm talking about, I have several recent podcasts laying out the groundwork for this and why I, you know, and one of the recent ones is called The Government Odds of Financial Success is Zero. I've got another one on my Libertarian Advisor page, which we're trying to merge into one blog right now. It's taking a lot longer than I thought it would, so apologize on that front. But I have one called, you know, Why We're All Slaves to Central Bankers. I'd recommend checking that out. And also, I've got a little bit of a cold going on today, so hope you bear with me on my voice right now. And, you know, before I give my assessment of the president, I also wanted to provide some context for new listeners, or maybe someone who just started following me. Which, by the way, I greatly appreciate everyone who's been sharing this, getting the information out, supporting this message, and actual truth, unlike the James Comey, you know, phony baloney choir boy act that he was doing last night. And I didn't actually see the interview. I did read the transcripts this morning, but, you know, I don't want to digress too much on that. And, you know, for the 2016 election, I was pulling hard for Rand Paul. And once it became clear to me that his chances of winning the nomination were, you know, zero, I decided to support Donald Trump. Now, this was probably towards the end of December 2015, going into 2016. In Arizona, we have, I think our primary was in January, maybe February. It definitely wasn't the first one, but it was, you know, at that point, you know, I was registered Republican because I wanted to support Rand Paul. Then decided, you know what, Rand Paul has zero chance of winning. And so I through, not that my support really mattered that much. This was before I was, you know, had the Facebook page, before I was doing a lot of activism, decided, you know what, I'm going to pull for Donald Trump. And it wasn't because I thought, you know, Donald Trump would win. You know, I could really care less about, you know, picking somebody, you know, because they're going to win or not. You know, otherwise, you know, I probably would have picked Hillary. But, you know, I didn't support Donald Trump, you know, just because I thought he'd win. I supported him because I knew he wasn't on the Council on Foreign Relations. He wasn't a globalist. I knew the people who hated him were the same people that I hated. And I knew that he wasn't afraid to speak his mind. He wasn't afraid to counterpunch back. And that was one of the problems I had with Ron Paul. I mean, not to, I mean, here I am, you know. So Ron is the father, for those who don't know. Rand is the son, who is a current senator from Kentucky. And, you know, I guess like my only real criticism of Ron would be he was too much of a nice guy at times, or really all the time, which, I mean, you know, very admirable. You know, if there's, and again, I hate, you know, even doing this by, you know, criticizing Ron Paul, but, you know, if there's one thing that you can nail him on, it's the fact that, you know, he had the nice guy bit down too much, and really, you know, when he was attacked unfairly, he would, you know, basically use his surrogates, maybe like people like me and some other people out there, to attack, but he wouldn't really attack himself. But I knew Donald Trump was no Ron Paul, and unfortunately, you know, a lot of the good things we liked about Ron Paul is, you know, he's not that stuff either. But, you know, when it comes to counterpunching, we know that Donald Trump is somebody that's certainly not going to hold any punches back. Now, does that mean that, you know, I agree with everything that Donald Trump had to say as a candidate and everything that he was doing? You know, of course not. Now, I knew that aside from Rand Paul and Ron Paul, you know, we're basically the only two candidates who were not globalist or CFR members or mainstream media lapdogs. And so, you know, I was willing to take a shot. And not only was I willing to take a shot, but I was so pissed at the Libertarian Party that I decided to make my Libertarian Advisor page to, you know, not only expose, you know, the Libertarians' hypocrisy with Bill Weld and everything else, but also to expose the left's hypocrisy and point out some, you know, some hardcore facts about Hillary Clinton. I'll link in the notes below, but one of those blog posts was called something along the lines of Hillary's lies, crimes, and other dubious connections. Now, this predated the podcast, but, you know, it probably would be good to turn that into a podcast at some point. I know we did a Facebook Live on this that went into pretty great detail. But, you know, the genesis of that was I wanted to, right before the election, to have a, you know, really, you know, a source said, okay, you know, what are Hillary's greatest lies, crimes, and other connections that she has that need to be exposed? Let's get a good top 10 list. Well, trying to create a top 10 list of lies, crimes, and dubious connections for Hillary Clinton and limit to top 10, pretty much impossible. So then I decided, okay, let's just make it the alphabet. So I went all the way through the alphabet pretty easily. And then actually went almost through the alphabet twice. And then we're getting so close at this point to the election that I was like, screw it. I just have to get this out here because, you know, if you can't, you know, discern, you know, that Hillary is not the person that you want leading the country after reading this list, you know, I don't need to provide another 100 examples. You know, these ones are so great already. And again, anyone listening to me right now, I don't need to keep going on and on because, you know, odds are if you're listening to me, you already know about Hillary's lies, crimes, and dubious connections. However, if you've got liberals who are, you know, just arguing about this stuff, and you don't feel like, you know, making a list of your own or Google searching one, I think mine is probably one of the more comprehensive ones that is out there. Now, with that said, several of the videos that I initially posted on there have since been taken down, so I need to go back and rework that. So, you know, it's videos, you know, pertaining to Seth Rich or videos that show, you know, Julian Assange talking about Seth Rich and connections that he had with her and all this other stuff. But, you know, so I had another guy who was, I believe, a Haitian senator, I'm not sure what they called themselves down there, but he was a high level official down there and talking about how Bill Clinton tried to buy him off and he refused. And I think that video was taken down as well. But, you know, there is a lot of hardcore truth out there, a lot of hardcore facts there. So, you know, I spent 3 months pretty much working full time, not getting paid, by the way, to support President or candidate Trump to help defeat Hillary. Spent my own time, my own limited money. You know, we just had a child, had another baby on the way, 7 months pregnant. My wife was 7 months pregnant. Obviously I wasn't. But I did spend, you know, a lot of energy trying to help the president out or future president out. And because of your help, we were able to reach over 1 million people the week of the election from a standstill just, you know, 2.5-3 months earlier. You know, we reached people with a lot of hardcore news. And, you know, people, you know, some people want to say, oh, all you did was meme. Well, guess what? I mean, the election is now being blamed on Facebook, you know, and you know what, the Russians, you know, reached what they, I don't know what they claim that the Russians reached, that they spent, you know, some amount of money. They reached what, like, I think it was, you know, these ads reached like 3, 4, 5 million people. You know, who cares? You know, I reached over 1 million by myself, you know, so if you want to talk about dollar for dollar, you know, where your money's best spent is, you know, if you help support us, you know, we're going to get the truth out there and we're going to be able to expose these things. And now it's going to be a little bit tougher in this current environment, at least in the midterms. Not that I really care enough about anybody during these midterms anyways to do any of this for, but in 2020, it's going to be tougher to pull this off with Facebook because of the shadow banning, because of the algorithms changes that they made, because of the AI systems. You know, the only information that's going to get out there is the information they want getting out there. You know, I posted something about, you know, Syria and Alex Jones the other day before the bombing occurred, and it only reached 62 people. It was a video challenging the narrative and exposing a lot of the false flag operations that have been going on. And what, I've got 33,000 people reaching me, and it reached 62. So, you know, they're doing a lot to curtail, you know, who gets to see what. Now, ultimately, I think this is gonna be a major positive, because ultimately what this means is that people are then gonna hate getting censored, both on the left and on the right. Obviously on the right, but on the left, you know, they're mad at Facebook for one reason. And on the right, they're mad at Facebook for a totally different reason. It's, and a lot of this is funny, because before the Cambridge Analytica story broke out, I actually deleted my Facebook apps off my phone just the day before. Nothing to do with Cambridge Analytica. It had to do with the censorship issues, because obviously, you know, I mean, that's why I was on Facebook with a fake name, Gnome de Plume, for about probably 12, 13, 14 years. I'm trying to think how long Facebook's even been out, like, because I was on it the first year it came out, so 2004, I had a fake name from 2004 all the way to 2016, at which point I kept getting, liberals kept reporting me, and Facebook threatened to kick me off unless I identified who I was, because of the page that I was having and all the success that page was having. But this censorship is going to lead to eventually having decentralized platforms coming out. I don't know if they will probably not reach critical mass by 2020. So, you know, and again, I don't even know if there's anyone out there that I'm even going to be pulling hard enough for. I mean, I'm pulling for Adam Kokesh with the Libertarian Party, but, you know, he's not guaranteed to win the Libertarian Party, and I'm not guaranteed to support whoever they want to run, especially if it's Bill Weld. And I actually remember watching a clip from Milo. It was a live stream he was doing from his hotel room. He also had another one where he was going over the victory parade, the victory coverage, of which there was basically no media there at all covering the president's speech or the now president-elect speech. But I remember, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was Milo being Milo in his hotel room. And I remember just watching it over and over and over again, and just, you know, thinking that, you know, we had done it, we had stopped this, you know, all this evil that was, you know, going to obviously happen underneath Hillary. And just, you know, I thought it was a new day for America. All right, so getting back to the president, after the president had won, I remember my uncle calling me at probably 3, 4 in the morning. This is Arizona time, which, you know, we're probably on Pacific time at the moment. And I remember just having tears of joy in my eyes. Now, I wasn't even bawling or anything, but, you know, it was just such a great day for me. And I was just so happy, so relieved. So then fast forward to Inauguration Day. And right as the president's ending his speech, my wife, who was 9 months pregnant at the time, called and said, "The doctor said the baby needs to come out tomorrow," which also happened to be the first day Obama wasn't in office, or Trump's first day in office, depending on how you want to look at it. Now, I ended up wearing a Trump t-shirt to the hospital. The first photo with my baby was with a Trump shirt. 3 months before the election, I spent $250 on a MAGA hat, a signed MAGA hat. I went to rallies. I spent time in libertarian independent circles, trying to convince people to give Trump a chance. And again, apologize for my voice right now. It's really been really hurting me as I recorded this right now. But before that, you know, I also spent time in Republican circles getting attacked for telling, you know, Republicans to give Trump a chance. So, you know, I was out there taking a whole bunch of flack from a lot of people, you know, lost a lot of friends, you know, had family members that were mad at me, had, you know, the whole entire nine yards. You know, I also went to a Trump rally after he became president, this is the day before he pardoned Sheriff Joe, and I was there from 9 in the morning to 10 p.m. And just to get some context to this, this is September in Phoenix. It was over 100 degrees outside at the time, the entire time I was standing in line. So, you know, how many of you are going to stand outside for 12 hours when it's over 100 degrees outside? Probably not very many of you. So for the ones, you know, call me pussies or blank suckers or all this other, you know, things that, you know, been attributed my way for daring to criticize the president on anything, you know, how many of you are out there standing in line for 12 hours to be able to get front row for the president? Probably none of you. So unless you're willing to do that stuff, you know, and done everything I've already done, you know, odds are there's very few people, you know, that have done as much as I have. You know, obviously, you know, you've got the Matt Drudges and Alex Jones and Cernoviches and people on that level. So I'm not trying to say I'm anything like that, but in terms of being, you know, your average everyday person out there trying to support the president, you know, if you haven't done as much as me and you want to, you know, criticize me, then, you know, you're welcome to, you know, go out there and start, you know, doing, putting yourself out there like I am and really, you know, taking the arrows like I've been taking them.
And just so we're clear, when I say you, I don't necessarily mean you that's listening to you right now. I mean, like, the people that are criticizing me, just so we can be clear on that.
Porters around me, and there was Antifa everywhere. And so, you know, walking back to the car that night was a little unnerving. Now, I was also interviewed by Right Side Broadcast Network to help support the president. And so what I'll do is I'll play that interview right now. If you guys don't want to hear it, fast forward a few minutes.
Everyone, I'm Tim Pichot. I'm also the Libertarian Advisor on Facebook. And I'm here because I wanted to be able to show the other side that the media wouldn't show. The media just wants to make it seem like you've got all these angels over here on the left and you've got all these Nazis over here on the right. When the fact of the matter is, I'm scared to even wear any Trump paraphernalia here. That's why I'm not wearing any today, because I'm scared about the left coming out here and maybe attacking me. I've got two small daughters that I need to make it home to tonight, but I'm not scared of the Trump voters. I'm scared of whatever Antifa crawls out of their parents' basements and what reprisal they might have, because the media is only giving one side of the story. I saw a live stream actually from InfoWars where they were
USA! 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 USA!
I remember seeing live streams where there was people saying, you know, respect the bat, mother effort, and then that guy is waving bats at people, and then he ends up getting knocked down and then has a GoFundMe page that raises over $100,000, but they make it sound like he's some angel or he did nothing wrong when he's out there saying respect the bat, you know, intimidation. I saw other live streams where guys with Israeli flags are being attacked or harassed, and they're using classic techniques.
You were talking to me earlier about why you like Trump so much. Can you tell people what you're talking about?
Yeah, so to back up a little bit, I said I would never vote Republican again. I saw how the mainstream media, how they bamboozled Ron Paul. But the thing I like the most is that he's doubling down on things he's saying. He's calling out the fake news for what it is, and he's not giving in to their narrative. Now, I've seen a couple times where he gets himself in trouble because he's trying to placate them, but I like how he's changing the culture. He's changing the culture of, you know, I can just go on Twitter, or we can have reporters like you guys, or we can bypass the mainstream media, because there is a bullshit factory putting out fake news left and right, and that's the number one thing that Trump has done, is to help change the culture where you don't have to get your media what's ever on the box anymore. That's why there's Yogi Bear reruns that get more views than CNN. And luckily, one of the guys actually told that to the CNN reporter, but I doubt that would be ours. It wasn't live. And the website is, I have a whole section called How It's Rigged, where I go over how the economic data is rigged, how the inflation data is rigged, how the unemployment data is rigged. And so from someone who's an economic expert, of knowing how they do that. So I'm just here to point out, like, how they're basically misrepresenting all the facts to try to let people know how it's rigged. I also had a section before the election showing how they skew the polls on there too. So my bias is towards liberty, my bias is towards telling the truth, my bias is towards freedom, and that's a lot. And luckily you guys are too, which is why I'm glad that I ran into you guys here today.
But, you know, this is all coming from the standpoint of, clearly, you know, I just want to paint the picture that I'm not some dumb liberal, or I'm not, you know, all the other expletives that have been thrown my way. I'm not a rhino Republican. I am, getting back to how this started, a free thinking human being. And so now I want to go over some of the good things the president has done. Now, I think the best thing he's done is change the culture in terms of fake news. And again, people that follow me know that I was, you know, one of the first people to the fake news party. But, you know, him being able to get that out there into the ethos, it wasn't me that got it out there in the ethos. It was Donald Trump that got it out there. It was actually liberals who first started calling people like us fake news. So, you know, that's, you know, we got to culturally appropriate their term and throw it back on them, because I think that is the best term possible. But, you know, now that people look at CNN and see that it's all fake, and they look at, you know, all these other outlets, MSNBC, you know, even Fox, I mean,
when I was trying to find that clip of Milo that I was talking about earlier, and I didn't find that one, but I did find the one where he was walking through the basically Trump's victory speech in the hotel, and you can bet your ass if this was Hillary or Obama, that would have been filled. But they went through Fox News, they went through CNN, they went through all the different outlets out there, and they had no reporters covering it. They went to like a general press pool area, and there's maybe like three or four reporters covering the speech. I mean, even Fox News had zero people covering it, and then they had Milo going through and eating ice cream from there, and it was really quite the hilarious scene to witness. And maybe what I'll do is I'll play a little bit from that right now.
America, this should tell you something. What it tells you is that these people don't really want to tell you what's happening. They don't really want to. Once the narrative folds apart, once the narrative is, you know, self-destructs,
they abandon ship
under the reality of a Trump victory. They just leave.
They
just leave. So whatever they tell you tomorrow, however they explain this victory, whatever they tell you led to this victory, they have no clue. They don't know. And this is why. This is why.
Look at this.
Because they're not
this sick media right now. They're gone. They
they're
left.
They're not here.
This is the Titanic.
They're not here.
They left.
So here you have one of the greatest upsets in maybe even world history, like a David and Goliath type event, and none of the media besides Breitbart is covering this. I mean, it's absolutely incredible that this could even happen. So let's go continue with some of the good things that Trump has done. Obviously killed the TPP, although now he's talking about bringing that back. You know, he appointed Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, or nominated him, who was then appointed. Great thing right there. Initially stopped World War III. I think he's actually trying to fix the economy, although he is espousing some fake job numbers. But I think his heart is good. I think he wants to do good. But you know, it's just not enough to want to do good. You know, I think you have to actually, you know, be honest with people about the current situation of the financial system. Although he is in a rock and a hard place, because if he did tell the honest truth, then everything would collapse and he'd get blamed. Or what he can do is like this fake it till you make it. Let's try to, you know, inject the economy with steroids. Let's try to get the, you know, tax cuts down, even though we're not going to, you know, cut any government spending. But, you know, but I think he actually does want to do good. You know, I don't think that that's the right measure to take. And again, I've talked about this on many, many different podcasts before. So let's not beat on that too much right now. You know, he has decreased a lot of the regulations. That's great. You know, he had an EPA head who didn't like the EPA, so I think that was great. Pro-Second Amendment, although he has wavered on that every now and then. And I think he actually did want to do good for our country and not blow it up and not have this Clower and Piven type, you know, leftist takeover that Obama was trying to engineer the entire time, that Hillary would have definitely maintained. And so Clower and Piven, I think they were Obama's teachers when he was at Columbia, and they're basically what they wanted was to overrun the welfare system in America. So then that way, when you collapse everything, you can then rebuild it back into your image, is basically the cliff notes on that. Now, as I start to levy some criticisms against the president, what I want to do is pull up a quote that I thought was from Thomas Paine. And actually, as I was trying to pull this up, I actually realized that it was not a Thomas Paine quote. It was from Edward Abbey, who wrote The Desert Anarchist. And it's, "The duty of the patriot is to protect his country from its government." And again, I'd always attributed that to Thomas Paine. And when I wanted to basically make sure I wasn't messing up the quote, found out that I was actually perpetuating fake news all along.
But so I had a friend who's a big time Trump media supporter who that, wrote my Facebook page that analysis.
You know, Tim, I'm very confused with your all around and figured ideas. It was from him, but unfortunately, it looks
we should
like
all
it
be
wasn't.
Pulling
but
for
anyways,
Trump to
doesn't
do
matter.
What is best for his country and in turn the world. And now, what this was actually about was a Justin Amash, who is a I know he's a congressman out of Michigan, and what the tweet said was, "Witness the hypocrisy that our two-system party breeds. Check out these similar letters warning the president about commencing offensive strikes in Syria without congressional approval." And it goes on to say, in 2013, you had 119 Republicans sign this letter, and in 2018, you had 15 Republicans signed this letter. And then in 2013, you only had 21 Democrats sign the letter. And in 2018, you had 73. So it just shows a massive, massive hypocrisy. So it's funny, if you're gonna say, you know, I'm changing my ideas. No, I was against it the entire time. It's the president who has changed his ideas. And I can go on multiple different occasions where the president was against the war. You know, Zero Hedge, I think, had an article where it was like, these are all the times the president was against the war. And I tried finding that article. You know, I didn't search super hard, but I couldn't find it easily. Anyways, I mean, I'm sure you guys have all seen that. I'll have some other quotes, I'm sure, later on. So some of the problems that I had with the president, I mean, A, you've got the whole Syria situation, which I don't want to spend a ton of time on right now. But you also have, I mean, the first 6 months of this year, you have a fiscal year 2018, you have a debt that is increased by $598 billion. So we're in supposed boom times and on the verge of trillion-dollar deficits in boom times. You've got the candidate Trump talking about locking in these lower rates. He's mentioned Obama several times, you know, how stupid it was to have to be only be locking in these low rates for such a short amount of time, and how he is a businessman, you know, it'd be a great idea to lock in these low rates for a very long time. And, you know, now that he's a candidate, he's actually shortened the length of those debt maturities. As a candidate, he was railing against the fake job numbers and some of the fake GDP reports and saying, I don't think he used the word fake news, but he, you know, had basically talked about how these were phony numbers. And now that they're his numbers, he's, you know, using that for all his credit. You know, I think it was a dumb move for him to brace the stock market because, you know, there's other factors in play there, mainly hope and optimism and some short-term steroids in terms of getting tax cuts into the economy that have helped perpetuate that. But, you know, you've got, you know, all sorts of things with company buying back record amounts of stock, central banks all around the world still printing money, and central banks actually buying up the stock market, all sorts of shenanigans that are going on that really are outside of, you know, things that the president is doing. And so, you know, what I'm looking at is you've got Republicans controlling all houses of government, all branches of government, and yet we still have a debt that, you know, also, you know, we've suspended the debt ceiling. You know, there's, when it comes to the economy, you know, if he's going to sign a $1.3 trillion spending bill, then why did I bother electing him? If he's going to have a Janet Yellen clone in there in the Fed in terms of Jerome Powell, you know, why am I going to go bust my ass to go help elect him again? You know, and so if you do not fix the problem at the Federal Reserve, I don't care what problems, you know, you are or aren't going to fix, because that is the biggest problem. It is high tech slavery. There is no way out of it. And so, you know, it's like saying, oh, you know, if I do a really good job for my slave masters, then, you know, maybe they're going to give me, you know, some extra this, or let me keep some more of, you know, the cotton that I pick. Well, I don't care about that right now, because it is absolute high tech slavery. You know, I was led, and I was underneath the impression that he understood these things. And so, you know, maybe it's, you know, the next term we're going to do this, you know, a few years down the road. But there's absolutely no way he's even going to get there, you know, at the rate that he's going right now. And again, I don't want to spend a ton of time on that subject, but, you know, what, seeing him perpetuate these fake job numbers, seeing him perpetuate, you know, the Federal Reserve system, seeing him perpetuate, you know, all these spending increases, like, oh, I don't want to sign a $1.3 trillion deal and I'll never do that again. But, you know, guess what? You still did it. You still signed it. You're giving the impression that that's, you know, a good way to lead. And again, if we can't get this with, you know, Republicans, what, you think the Democrats are going to, you know, all of a sudden, you know, think, you know, you think the Democrats are just going to say, oh, you know what, we do have a spending problem. You know, we need to calm things down. You know, of course not. You know, they're going to say, you know, we had Bill Clinton in there. We ran surpluses. Then we had George Bush in there, Republican, and he messed everything up. So then Obama had to then increase the debt in order to fix things. Then we go and elect a Republican. The Republican, you know, cuts taxes for the rich, and I'm saying this in air quotes. And then all of a sudden, you know, we need to have a Democrat go in there, and they're going to have free reign to go increase the debt because it was the Republicans that screwed it up. And if it wasn't for tax cuts on the rich and trying to help out, you know, all these big corporations, then we wouldn't have had to have all these deficits. And then the left is going to have cover. They're going to have cover from the media. They're going to have cover from everybody. And this is such an obvious narrative that's going to be used against all the GOP in 2020. That's not even funny. I mean, it's so obvious. I see this from, you know, an absolute mile away. And, you know, what's the GOP going to run on? Like, oh, elect us and we're going to repeal Obamacare. Oh, wait, that didn't happen. Oh, wait, elect us And we're going to go
and speaking of the debt, I mean, the debt has been increased.
Actually, we're going to increase the debt more in February, where I think the debt went up $100 billion over the course of 2 weeks, which if you actually extrapolate that out over 8 years, which would be an 8-year presidency, it would mean you'd add $20 trillion to the debt. So, you know, elect the Republicans and we'll only spend, you know, twice as much as Obama. And so what? Then we're going to have a national debt of $40 trillion? I mean, it's absolutely absurd, the things
that
we're doing
right now.
And a lot of this goes with what I've been saying all along. I mean, when it comes to the economy, I mean, all the entire economy is built on debt. It's built on credit. It's built on the expansion of people being able to borrow more and more money, governments being able to borrow more and more money. And as soon as that gravy train stops, this entire growth stops. And so I don't want to sign onto a system where I know that there's, you know, no way out of it. I don't want to sign onto a system by saying, you know, I'm going to vote for President Trump because, you know, he's going to fix all these things with the economy. Well, there's no way you can fix it. You know, it's like someone that borrows on a 0% credit card and all of a sudden, you know, spends a whole bunch of money on stuff. Well, you know, unless they're, you know, have got some great business idea and they're going to, you know, use money to make money. But we're, you know, as a country, we're beyond that. We are in... You know, we're at the point where somebody's on the ground, they're dying, they need CPR immediately. If you go through, you know, a checklist of, you know, I got to do this and I got to do that and let me call this in and make sure this and do that, this, that, the other thing, you know, and spend 10 minutes going through your checklist, well, guess what? That person's going to be dead. They don't have time. This is an emergency situation. It needs to be treated like an emergency situation. And right now we're treating it like, okay, well, you know, well, if we just get some more Republicans in 2020 and then we can get things done. And that, you know, we don't have time. We have no time to wait at all. And at this point, I'd rather, you know, spend my precious time, you know, trying to build up the new economy, trying to look into blockchain technologies, trying to actually solve problems instead of, you know, looking, just trying to pretend that everything is okay, because everything is not okay right now. And, you know, I could keep rambling on and keep going on and on for this, but right now my throat is really hurting me. But, you know, the last thing I really want to talk about is you've got guys like Alex Jones, who I stopped listening to him probably, you know, a few months into the Trump presidency, because everything was about Trump this and Trump that. And if we can just, you know, get Trump elected and he's going to solve everything, and, you know, there's nothing Trump can basically ever do that will ever be wrong. Well, you've got him turning the page against this. You've got, you know, people like Cernovich, people like Mike Savage, people like Laura Ingraham, people like Tucker Carlson, people like myself, who are all upset at the president, you know, especially over the Syria situation. And again, you know, I have a podcast. The last podcast I did was on the Syria situation. I was planning on doing another podcast on the Syria situation right now, although my voice is, you know, does not feel great right now. So I'm not sure if I'll get that out today. So if not, stay tuned to the next podcast as I dovetail everything. I didn't want to blend too, you know, there's way too much to cover on both of these situations. So, I mean, the point of the matter is, if you have the people out, major, major, major media influencers, people that, you know, I'm sure people that are out there that I forgot to mention, a lot of the Ron Paul supporters, which we do number into the millions. So, you know, the political establishment wants to, you know, forget about that. But you've got, you know, a lot of the hardcore Tea Party people, you know, there's a big percentage of people that see what I see. I mean, even if only a tiny percentage of Alex Jones' audience, let's call it 10%, think like he does, which, you know, odds are, it's probably closer to 25% or closer to 50%. So let's say it's even 10%. And, you know, if 10% of the people who listen to Alex Jones decide, you know, I'm not going to vote for president, 10% of the people that listen to Tucker Carlson or to me or to anybody else decide to stay home, the GOP is not going to win. Trump's not going to win. I mean, either way, America doesn't win, because we want to perpetuate these lies, because there's lies that got us into all these wars. You know, the cliff notes and all this is, I do not believe it was the Syrians or Assad that did this. And even if it did, you know, do we have the moral high ground to go over there? You know, even if he did do it, you know, okay, well, let's see the evidence, let Congress vote on it. And if he did do it, then let's have a proper debate on this. Let's have the people decide. America was not in any imminent danger. America was not in any imminent threat. I want to bring up the War Powers Act. Well, the War Powers Act gives the president 60 days if there is an imminent threat, and there's a 30-day extension. So it gives a total of 90 days. I think we've been there since like 2006. General Wesley Clark, over a decade ago, exposed a plan of having, you know, going into Syria, going into Iraq, Sudan, all these other, I think it was like 7 or 8 countries that he listed off. You know, so how many, you know, am I just going to believe the intelligence officials. I mean, the same intelligence officials that brought us weapons of mass destruction, that brought us the Gulf of Tonkin, that brought us, you know, lie after lie after lie. And you know what? Let's see the evidence. And that's all I'm saying is, you know, is it that hard that if you're going to go send, you know, saber rattle, if you're going to go try to start World War III, can we at least have a proper debate on it? But with that said, you know, the new wealth management company, I'm hoping will be up and running this week. I mean, it's sort of ridiculous at this point. It's just been waiting for the state of Arizona. But once we're up and running, if you'd like to support what we're doing over here, please email info@thelibertyadvisor.com. You can head over to thelibertyadvisor.com, where we're going to have portfolios with protected growth strategies where we can limit your downside risk. You know, I mean, there's obviously a cost to this, so it depends on what the price of the insurance or the option we're going to buy on that is. But in layman's terms, we can limit your downside loss. You know, so let's say we get a situation where, you know, you're up 200%. Well, maybe you're only up 195 because of, you know, the price of the insurance. But if the market drops, you know, 70%, then you're only down 5 or only down 1.5 or 3.5 or 4. It just really depends what the price of the option is on that day. But there are ways to set your portfolio up, because what everybody wants is they want the market action when it's going up, but they don't want to have the market when it's in a major decline. And if you're close to retirement, that is a strategy that I would definitely recommend checking out. If you're, you know, recently retired, I would definitely recommend checking that out. If you've got some time to wait, probably, you know, I wouldn't say you necessarily have to do a strategy like that. But we also have other strategies where we're trying to look down the road and say, okay, you know, given what we see going on in the economy, given what we see going on in the world, the dollar, the monetary system, you know, how would we play it? What is the best way to basically hedge your bets and to not only, you know, try to protect the downside, but set yourself up for, because what I'm worried about is not necessarily what the next move is. It's going to be the response to the next move. And that response from the central banks is going to be to print more money, which at that point will cause a massive devaluation, I believe, of the dollar in the long run. And even if it doesn't in the short run, whatever they do to stimulate things is ultimately going to make that case even further. The other thing that's going on is you've got, you know, all this saber rattling is really drawing Russia and China closer together. China just launched their petro yuan. You've got the BRIC countries, so that's Brazil, Russia, India, and China, who are all trying to also get off the dollar. Now, they don't want to do, nobody really wants to be the reserve currency, because there are a lot of problems with being the reserve currency. But without getting off on that tangent, another tangent once again, you know, we do have strategies where we're using different commodities, where we're using, non-dollar denominated assets, stocks from overseas that we think are going to be doing well, ETFs from overseas that we think are going to be doing well, to all hedge against the dollar, hedge against what we see going on, and to help protect people. And we will also be able to offer blockchain-based IRAs, and we'll also have strategies for people who are high net worth to have them do these advanced charitable giving strategies where they can save millions of dollars in taxes and really use the tools that the elite use to help, you know, perpetuate their own family's legacies, to help strengthen their own family's legacies. So, you know, if any of that sounds, you know, good to you guys, you know, let us know. And please, you know, consider doing business with us, because really at the end of the day, you know, you got to do business with people that you like and trust. And right now, you know, I want to use this platform that I have in order to, you know, basically counteract fake news and help get the truth out there. And what I'd like to eventually have someday is a tiny media operation underneath me. And again, none of this is for so I can build myself up. This is for, you know, wanting to be able to save my future grandkids someday. It's able to save, you know, save us from potential World War III. These are the things that I'm trying to fight for, not so I can be famous. I mean, that's the last thing I want. You know, I really only, you know, even decided to even, you know, I only really decided to put my own name out there because I wanted to, you know, I had people saying, oh, well, this is just a made up page where, you know, you're too afraid to put your name out there. Well, you know, I'm not afraid to put my name out there. You know, the bad guys already know who I am. They're able to track me, trace me, surveil me. So I need the good guys to know who I am too. And so right now, you know, I'm trying to be one of those good guys. We're trying to build up a great future. And at the same time, you know, I'm not trying to paint a message of this doom and gloom, because, you know, I think that there are a lot of exciting things out there, especially in the world of blockchain. You know, we do have ways to defeat these people. We do have the methods to defeat these people, you know, and, you know, so I do think that, you know, one hand, the future is very pessimistic, but on the other hand, the future is also very, very bright. But in order for it to be bright, you've got to be able to get that message out there. So for people that are doing business with me, I think that they will not only hopefully be able to protect themselves from a disaster, but they'll also be able to make money while being able to fund a media operation that's going to be able to help themselves out, their kids out. And, you know, that's really the, you know, the shilling that I have to do for now. I will have another podcast later on that is will be about, you know, all the other false flag events, not all the false flag events, but just, you know, some of the false flag events that we've already seen in Syria and how, you know, basically the intelligence agencies cannot be trusted. So thank you for listening and take care.